This is a trimmed down podcast version of Tracks of My Life from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to this special RNIB Connect Radio 20th anniversary episode of Tracks of My Life. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark important moments in their life, from maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Jonathan Abreu, a freelance IT professional who specialises in accessible technology for everyone. Jonathan is a trustee of Vocalize, a Tech for Life volunteer here at the RNIB, and a member of Retina UK. Although having been diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa in 1992, this has not stopped Jonathan in his travels, exploring many parts of the world with his partner Annie. Hello, Jonathan, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby, and thank you so much for inviting me. What a pleasure it is to be with you.
The first track that you've chosen, Jonathan, starts at the end of the 1970s and goes into the very early 1980s with Yazoo and Goodbye 70s and the last year of school life for you too. This was a time of those sort of end of school house parties and also, I think, for you, a move from the South African countryside to Durban. What was sort of life like for you growing up in the South African countryside? And was it a bit of a sort of culture and lifestyle shock moving to Durban?
Well, Toby, when I grew up, I started life on a farm and then I moved into a small village in the countryside in South Africa. And because it was such a small village, we only had school for primary school in the village. So I ended up at boarding school for high school. And I actually was in Durban for a few years of that, and then in a smaller town called Ishawi, which is in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. And actually, the last 2 years of school were quite a lot of fun as a boarding school person, because I made some really good friends who I still have today. And the house parties we had, I had two, I'd like to say almost legendary house parties in my schooling time, because I was one of these people who got music from anywhere I could. And so I had all the music from the UK at the time. And because people came from all these different villages around the countryside, people spent the weekend sleeping on the floor all over our house. And it was just such fun. So, yeah, that was brilliant and such a good end to the schooling life that we all led there. And then my parents had decided to move from the countryside to Durban. And I went with them, of course, which is when I started my post-school education. And it was a bit of a culture shock going to the city. But nevertheless, the great thing about Durban is it's on the Indian Ocean. And despite having traveled far and wide, it is still one of my favorite oceans to swim in, because it has crashing waves and just amazing. And along with that, being free from school and living in the city, there were clubs I could go dancing to, all this music that I'd been recording, and go with friends that I'd met in Durban and just have the most amazing time. And coincidentally, one of my favorite bars at the time was a really late night bar, and it was called Yazoo's. So it was just perfect for this music and this time. I was in absolute heaven.
Some great early 80s synth sounds there with Yazoo and Goodbye 70s. We are moving from Durban to Johannesburg now, and your first job, Jonathan, as a computer programmer. And I might be right in thinking that this might be around the sort of early 80s, when the sort of birth and start of computing with the fantastic Sinclair ZX80, 81 and Spectrum and stuff and things like that. Was computer programming something that you had always wanted to get into?
Well, Toby, I got my first computer at the age of 12, and it was a Sharp MZ80A. And it was using a cassette tape as its memory. So it was as old as the hills kind of thing. And I mean, Some people have never even seen a cassette tape, let alone a computer like what I was using. I used to buy these computer magazines and I would copy the code line by line so that I could do whatever the graphics it was doing on this green screen using dashes and slashes and equal signs and all these things just to try and make a picture of some sort. So it really was very, very early days. But by the time I was a programmer in work, it was actually the sort of 87, so later in the 80s. Yeah, I really was at the very beginnings of computing, and I feel very privileged to have been able to do that.
And Jonathan, you were not just working during the day as a computer programmer, you were obviously working at night in Roxy Rhythm Spa. And your next track is very much from a band, Mango Groove. And I wondered if they ever played at the Roxy Rhythm Bar and what a typical night at the bar might be, if you can tell me what happened in that bar.
It was an amazing time. You know, it was, as I say, the late 80s. So South Africa was coming to the end of the awful apartheid. You know, I grew up in the apartheid era, and I'm very grateful for the fact that my parents were so anti-apartheid and taught us what was right and wrong. So for me, when I was living, I shared a house in South Africa with a couple of ladies, and one of them had a boyfriend who ran this Roxy Rhythm Bar, and he asked me if I'd like to work nights to help out. I jumped at the chance because it was in an area of Johannesburg where the colour bar was completely gone. So it didn't matter who you were welcome at this bar. And it was a place where bands started out. Mango Groove was there in their very early days, and I used to work every time they played because I just thought they were so good. And just the opportunity to work and socialize with everybody and anybody and hear these bands who were made up, again, of all South Africans, not just one group of South Africans, it was, for me, true freedom was definitely something we were starting to see in South Africa.
Home Talk by Mango Groove there, and fond memories of nights at the Roxy Rhythm Bar for you, Jonathan. We're now going to focus on what might be a slightly long gap year for you, which I think maybe took you 2.5 years, Jonathan. What made you want to set out on a sort of slightly longer gap year? It's something that, you know, some people might not want to do, and it's something that people might think, oh, this is quite sort of, not to say scary, but quite sort of, I suppose, you know, it's something that not everybody does. And it did take you to the UK, it did take you to Europe, to just name a few places.
Yeah, Toby, I always wanted to travel, and I decided rather than going as a student before I started working, I would work for 3 years, get some money in my pocket, and then I would go traveling so that I could actually have a little bit to spend along the way. And traveling has always been my passion and remains that. It's really my biggest passion and priority in life, really. So I took the opportunity to come over here, first of all, to the UK and spend a bit of time living in London. I managed to get some work as a computer person and just had the best time because all of a sudden I was in the city where all this music came from. And so I could go to concerts and theatres and musicals and exhibitions. And I went off into different parts of the UK. I went up into the Lake Districts and Scotland. And wow, it was just quite incredible. I then bought a bicycle and decided to go off and cycle in Europe for a while. So I spent 2 months cycling around France and Spain. I then traveled further into Eastern Europe and went to places like Vienna and Budapest, which allowed me to do something that as a kid I'd been forced to go to the opera with my mother. and to see one of the most difficult ones, Madame Butterfly. And at the age of 12, I just fell asleep in it. But in Vienna, I queued up with other travelers and went to see Aida. And in Budapest, I saw Fidelio. And what incredible operas those were. Then later I went back and got back on my bicycle through Belgium, Luxembourg and the Netherlands before coming back to the UK. And you're right, I spent more time traveling. I went actually to the Middle East, to Israel and Turkey. And then I decided to go across to the USA. Now, you've got to remember, this was all in 1990, so it was pre-internet. The only way I could communicate with my family was by letter, postcard, or the very occasional phone call. And of course, as a backpacker, I was far too busy having fun and traveling to spend too much time worrying about communication. So, yeah, it was brilliant. When I got to the west coast of California, I decided to buy myself another bicycle. And I cycled from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, which was really beautiful, cycling across the desert. Because when you're traveling across a desert in a car, you sort of see the scenery, but you don't experience it in the same way that you do with slow traveling on a bicycle. So it took me a lot longer than a year to accomplish what I found I wanted to accomplish, which was just travel and explore.
And I think it was sort of after this time of your, you know, exploration around the world, and when you were driving, that you realised that your eye condition, retinitis pigmentosa, had become so bad that you probably had to stop driving and things. How did that sort of feel at that time? Because it must have been such a big change in your life.
Well, Toby, when I was still travelling and I was in the USA, as I said, this was pre-internet and communication was scant. And my parents decided, after not seeing me for over 2 years, they wanted to come and see me. We met up in Denver in Colorado, and I was still driving at the time. And I was driving them through the city of Denver. My father turned to me and said, "Do you know you've just driven through a red light?" My answer was, "What light?" And that was where we discovered that there was something wrong with my vision. At that stage, I knew I had some night blindness, but I thought that was just normal. People had night blindness and you deal with it. I had no idea there was anything else wrong with my vision. My father was obviously not comfortable with me driving, so he took over for the rest of the time we were together. And I carried on traveling for a little longer after that, both in the USA and back here in the UK. But I was concerned and I needed to know what was wrong with my vision. So I went back to South Africa, where I saw various people, starting with a really good friend of mine who's an optometrist, and then various consultants and professors. At my last appointment with the consultant, he told me I have a disease called retinitis pigmentosa and that I was to stop driving that day. It was huge because in South Africa, there was practically no public transport, and it also meant that I had to stop riding my bicycle, which was quite devastating for me. I had gone to the appointment on my own, and so I had driven myself there. I drove myself home and gave my younger sister my car keys, and that's the last time I've driven a motor car, which was in 1992.
Gosh. And I suppose sort of coming back to that time travelling, what is the track that sums up that time for you, and why have you chosen it?
Well, Toby, I've chosen Bob Dylan and the times they are a-changing. And I've chosen Bob Dylan for a very special reason. At the end of that cycling down the California west coast to Santa Cruz, I met up with a cousin of mine who lived there. And I have to say that hippies don't die. They just go to Santa Cruz. It's the most amazing place to go to. And he treated me to going to a Bob Dylan concert. I imagine this is 1992. Bob Dylan was, well, a lot younger, as we all are. And he was one of those people who, if you got him at a good concert, he was spectacular. And that's what he was that night. It was such an amazing experience for me. It meant that I already knew his music, but having been to a concert where he was just on such form was incredible. I've chosen the times they are a-changing because, in retrospect, that cycle ride was really, really special, not just because of the experience I had at the time, but it turns out that that was the last time I went cycling on my own on any sort of adventure. And so the times have changed ever since then, as they do for everybody. But really, it's all about my vision and how that has changed over the years to where we are today.
The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times, they are a-changing.
Bob Dylan there, and The Times They Are A-Changing, and a track that sums up not only a great journey for you, but a fantastic Bob Dylan concert too. We now come to a time in your life, Jonathan, when you say that you moved to the UK as it was a place that maybe gave you more independence in life. And also, it's a time when you met Annie too. Why do you think moving to the UK gave you more independence than maybe back in South Africa?
Toby, to me, independence can be summed up in three things. Being able to go to work unaided, being able to visit a friend unaided, and being able to buy a pint of milk unaided. Now, I say unaided, I mean not relying on anybody to take you from home to your work, your friend, or your shop, but rather, if you need help, being in a place where you can ask for help along the way, but only where and when you need it, not where and when people think you need it. And so for me, living in South Africa, although I used the little bit of public transport that was available, I had to rely on people so much. And coming to live in London, I knew that there was public transport, tubes, buses, trains. And even though I was living in the middle of London, sort of just on the Kilburn Borders sort of area, and I was working out in Egham in Surrey, I could still do that every single day at the time that I chose to go to work, in the manner I chose, on the route I chose, and I could get home again. That, to me, that's true independence.
How did you and Annie first meet then?
Well, you know, when you come to a new city, people want to set you up. I've got this lovely lady you should meet, and so on. And so I went on quite a number of blind dates, if you'll excuse the pun. But what happened with meeting Annie was quite different. My aunt was visiting me from South Africa and staying with me in my flat. And the daughter of a good friend of hers came to visit her. Now, she couldn't see any photos of me because there weren't any, but she could see my music collection, my book collection, and even my wine collection. And she said to my aunt that this is someone that Annie could be good friends with because our music tastes and book tastes were so different, and well, we both enjoyed wine. So it wasn't so much a date. It was more here's somebody who lives in London, who coincidentally is from South Africa, has a similar background, is also Jewish, which I am. And so I went to meet her begrudgingly because yet again I was being set up. We actually had a cup of coffee at her flat. She'd primed her friends and they phoned her at particular times to make sure that everything was okay and we're ready to come rushing round if necessary. But we ended up having a lovely afternoon together. And at the end of the afternoon, as I was leaving, I asked Annie if she'd like to go to, of all things, my office Christmas party with me. She said yes. And that was in 1996. We're still together today. We still love traveling the world together. And Annie has been on my entire sight loss journey. So she, of anyone in the world, understands the most what it is having gradually lost my vision over all these years. The most important thing is we just still have fun and we still go out and do things and travel and enjoy life.
You both went on holiday to Cape Town, and I wondered how much South Africa may have changed with perhaps a different viewpoint because of the vision that you had.
Yeah, you know, Toby, having both come from South Africa and having family still living in South Africa, we go to South Africa on fairly regular occasions. This particular time, we went, it was pretty new in our relationship. We'd only been together a few years. And we decided that as well as visiting family, we would go off to Cape Town and have a bit of fun together. And South Africa, of course, had changed quite a lot and continues to change every time I visit South Africa. But on this particular trip to South Africa all those years ago, Toby, I have to tell you a very funny story about why I've chosen this next track. We were driving, it was raining in Cape Town, and I was directing Annie where to drive. And as we were going up the ramp onto one of the motorways, there was a sign that warned about slippery when wet. And I said to Annie, did you know that Talking Heads got the name of their album, Slippery When Wet, from driving along this road and seeing that sign? And as we drove a little further along, I pointed out a part of the motorway that had never been developed. It just suddenly ended. And I pointed out and said, and that's where they got the song, We're on the Road to Nowhere. Of course, I was pulling her leg, but she believed me for quite some time until one day I had played the song and I just burst out laughing. And she realized I'd just been telling her a long story.
Talking Heads and The Road to Nowhere there, and a memorable time on holiday for you and Annie too, Jonathan. We now come to another gap year for you, but this time with Annie too. And this was just over a year, so not quite as long as your first sort of gap year. And this was during sort of 2011, 2012, and you travelled from Antarctica to Los Angeles. What made you and Annie want to sort of take a bit of a gap year at this time, and why this particular route?
You know, Toby, going back to my last song, We're on the Road to Nowhere, that became very much our theme of our travels. We've done a lot of traveling around the world, and a lot of it is with little to no planning, but rather just choosing the destination close to the time of leaving, even at times, and going off and traveling. Never before had we gone somewhere because I needed to see it and I wanted to see it before I didn't have the opportunity because my vision had deteriorated by 2011 quite significantly. That place was Antarctica. I have always dreamed of going to Antarctica. Antarctica was astounding. I could spend hours just talking about Antarctica, how incredible it was, how vast, how it makes you realize how small we are, how beautiful it was, the magnificence of the icebergs and the penguins, just sitting on the snow, watching the penguins go about their daily lives and being one of the very few on board the ship lucky enough to actually camp out on the snow and ice one night and wake up in this half light at about 3 o'clock in the morning where the sky was this beautiful shade of purple because it never went dark. And seeing at the edge of our camping area these three penguins standing looking at us as if to say, what are these things here? From Antarctica, we were going to take buses and coaches in whatever direction it took us to get back to Buenos Aires, which is where our flight departed from. But we kept traveling, and we decided at 3 months we would extend it to 6 months and do this big round trip around the top of the South American continent, back down through Brazil and to Buenos Aires. So yes, it took us a long time. In fact, we went into Mexico, which we had never planned to do, and spent 7 weeks traveling around Mexico and doing, again, amazing things. We went ziplining across the largest canyons of Mexico and sleeping in hostels at the bottom of one of these canyons. And it's just the adventures never stopped. And so it eventually took us 388 days to the point where we were on the Santa Monica Pier. And Annie said to me, if you look up, you'll see you're standing under a sign that says the end of the route. And we decided to go home.
And I think whilst you were in Mexico, outside your hostel where you were staying, there's a tribute act which was playing, I think, some of Bob Marley's music. And your next track is by Bob Marley and the Wailers, and it's Stir It Up. And I wondered how good a rendition did this tribute act make of it?
Well, it was loud, let's say that. I fell in love with reggae music as a kid, and Bob Marley being the most amazing reggae artist. But because this guy was doing the best he could, let's say, and every night we didn't have to go to the bar, because from our hostel room we could sit and listen. We had a balcony, we could sit on the balcony, we could hear him playing Bob Marley, and in between we could hear the sound of the ocean waves not far from us. And it was such a special place and such a special time in our lives. And so, yes, this really stirs it up with the memories for me.
The great Bob Marley and the Wailers there, and Stir It Up, and memories of a fond gap year for you and Annie too, Jonathan. Obviously, Jonathan, you have been living in London for a number of years now, and for me, as a visually impaired person, I lived in London for about 20 years, and the wonderful thing about London is obviously the public transport, getting about. I spent a lot of time going to see theatre shows and the odd concert too, and I wondered what really sort of makes London for you as a visually impaired person.
You've kind of said a lot of what I'm going to say, Toby. Just being able to live in this amazing city, and I'm lucky enough to live near Hyde Park, so I go walking in Hyde Park, and I say that that's one of the few places in the world where I can walk and daydream, because I know it well enough that even if I take a wrong turning on a path, I'll always find a landmark where I can find myself again. So the walking city that we live in, and like you say, the theatres and museums and galleries, and it's just quite incredible, especially with the fact that so much of it is audio described these days. When audio description was new, we would sort of rush off to see anything that was audio described, whereas today I choose what I want to go and see. But really, one of the other great, great things about London for me is the ability to go and be at live music concerts. Because, as I said to you, growing up in South Africa, I managed to get hold of the music from the UK and beyond. But we had very limited concerts in South Africa. One of the artists who came a number of times was Chris de Burgh. So we would all rush off to see Chris de Burgh every time he came. And later in life, more artists did start coming in the post-apartheid years.
And for your next track, you've chosen sort of, I think, one of the sort of icons of early 80s British sort of music and the new romantic scene and everything else, with Adam and the Ants and Ant Music. And obviously, British music has played a lot in your life. And I wondered how much were you influenced by Adam Ant, maybe in those early 80s, and how much you think his music sort of stands up today?
Well, like you say, I think the only word is iconic. Honestly, his music, from the first bar or first beat, you know it's him. He is just unique. When I was at the concert and this came on, it was just, wow. I'm actually at this concert live, hearing this man play this music now. What a privilege.
A classic of the early 1980s, new romantic scene there with Adam and the Ants and Ant Music. Jonathan, we come to your final track now, the one that you might like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Toby, I chose a song to pass on from one of my favorite African artists, a South African artist. His name was Lucky Dube. And the song I've chosen is Different Colors, One People. The reason I chose Lucky Dube as my artist is that his genre of music is actually reggae. And when I discovered Lucky Dube years ago, he became a firm favorite of mine. And I chose him as well because I wanted to go and see him in concert. The first time I knew he was playing in concert was in 2006 or early 2007. Shortly before that, my father had passed away. I was still in my mourning period as a Jewish man, and so I couldn't go to the concert at that time. And I said to Annie, well, he tours regularly, we'll go and see him next time. Only sadly, when he went back to South Africa after that tour later in 2007, he was gunned down and shot dead when somebody was hijacking his car. That was tragic. But the message from this that I take is, it might say different colors, one people, but I say different people, one people, because in my travels around the world, as a blind or visually impaired person, I have had the most amazing experiences just because I happen to be carrying a white cane because I can't really see. And the one that really is just so special to me was when we were in China. It was at a time when I had recently started using a white cane, and you know, I was a little bit not keen on using the white cane, as I'm sure many of us are when we start using it. And I'd left it in the car when we were walking up an area called Moon Hill, because I thought we were just going up a hill. It would be easy. What I didn't know was that the Chinese love steps. So they had built steps all the way up this hill. Going up was okay, because even though I had no real depth perception, I could manage going upstairs, kicking my toes against the edges of the steps. So even though they were different lengths, different depths, totally uneven, I could manage going up. Going back down was quite a challenge, and Annie was having to tell me each step as we went. There were some Chinese ladies running up and down with cold drinks, trying to sell them to all of us visitors, be we Chinese or foreign. And one of them had obviously watched me and went off into the bamboo forest, came back with a stick and gave it to me. Now, through the conversation with our guide, she had thought there was something wrong with my legs, but we explained what it was with my eyes. No matter what the problem was, she saw somebody struggling and she wanted to help. And so that's why this song is, to me, so important, because we should all remember that no matter who we are, where we are, what we are people. And when somebody offers you a helping hand, I always say take it, because they're doing it with the best intentions, and all they want to do is make sure that you don't struggle. So that's my message, Toby.
And what a wonderful message, which I think we should all take on. Well, thank you very much indeed, Jonathan, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity, Toby. I've enjoyed it, even though choosing seven tracks was way more difficult than I ever thought it would be.